Yeah, you're going to join us for Conversations with Robert Horton when we talk about some of the ways movies cheat by using classical, well-known classical music because it's already in your head. Or if you're going to be with us for Michael Parks, we would like you to be with us for our pledge drive on Wednesday of our spring pledge drive. We are trying to raise $15,000 for weekday by 11 o'clock. We are going to get there when you call 206-543-9595 or toll-free, since you're listening perhaps on Bainbridge Island.
Maybe you're listening in Sammamish, like Lisa Novich, who donated because of Von Palmer. She's moving to BC in June and really enjoys
very nice. Maybe
and,
you're...
And maybe, you know what, Lisa, I think you should keep listening to Von Palmer.
And she can.
On KUOW through the internet, KUOW.org, where you can also pledge your support.
You can, you know, maybe you are a person who moved away. And you're listening from Texas
or Greece
Louisiana.
Or
Greece.
We have people who regularly write into us from all over the place, including, you know, we have our gardening show on Tuesday. And I am always amazed that there are people who listen to us in other areas who are getting great advice from the gardeners, not necessarily the advice that's specific to the Pacific Northwest, but they're getting something out of that show. They call, they email questions into us, and hopefully those people are also listening right now and are calling in to pledge their support. There's a toll-free number, 1-866-677-5869.
Speaking of all the services that you help pay for with your dollars, we got an email from Kyle, just heard the interview with Kate Bornstein, thought she was fabulous. I'm a straight woman, married to a straight guy, yet because I'm highly interested in Buddhism and non-dualism, which also deals with the false binaries. She talked about the whole topic of gender is logically thrown on its ear. And she said, it sounded like this show was recorded. Can I hear it again?
Yes, you can.
Yes, you can. Because you can find it as a link. If you type in, well, we have a whole bunch of
actually,
words.
Really, if you just go to our website right now on Weekday's page, we have a link to the full interview that from which I excerpted that small amount that you heard. So you can simply go to KUOW.org and you should see Weekday's information and there you will find a link to the full Kate Bornstein interview when you'll get to listen to a full hour. And we really do have an hour's worth of programming. We're not like some other radio stations you might listen to where an hour ends up only being 20 minutes or so. I mean, an hour on public radio is a long time. It's a time when Steve and Kate get to really get into gender theory and queer theory and all of that stuff and really kind of hash it out and laugh a lot. As you
Kate
heard.
And I got into it. And so the beauty of it is you'll go to KUOW.org. You will see the first thing that pops up now is Pledge to Public Radio. Of course, you can skip that and go right to the website.
But you're not going to do that. What you're going to do is you're going to pledge first, or maybe you'll go online, you'll skip that, but you'll also be on the phone, 206-543-9595. You'll be on hold on the phone talking to our volunteers, pledging a certain amount while you're at KUOW.org looking up that incredible interview you just heard.
But you have the options. You see, you have those options, and it's not about making you. It's about you wanting to, and you want to in part because it has value. It has value to you every day of the week, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So we are looking for your support. We're looking for you to show your support because you are plugged into this public radio service throughout your day. It has helped you be informed about what's happening in Libya, about what's happening in the arts community, about what's happening in the gender world, which, of course, we all live in. So 1-866-677-5869 or go to the website and pledge online, KUOW.org. We're looking for your calls. We hope you will help us reach our goal of $15,000. We're a little more than halfway there, but we need your help. Give us a call. Vaughn Palmer is political correspondent with the Vancouver Sun. Hello, Vaughn.
Good morning.
We're doing our regular twice-yearly fun drive. Does it ring familiar to your ears, or does it ring... Well, by now it must be familiar after all these years of you doing this. But, CBC doesn't have to quite do this, do they?
No, they don't. They just get a big sort of cash grant from the Canadian government every year. Supposedly no strings attached. Most of the time it isn't. Once in a while there's an issue. But, they do pretty well off it. It's around $1 billion at the moment, so that's pretty good. Most of the money, of course, goes to television. As you will know, television is a lot more expensive to mount than radio, so most of the CBC grant goes to the television services, and then the rest, what's left over, goes to radio.
Yeah. Well, here we do it by asking people to show their support. All right, so Vaughn, we got a government change.
We've got an election in Canada, another one. I joked the other day that it was 7 elections in 4 years. It's actually 4 in 7 years, but I wasn't even corrected when I said it. So Canadians just have a sense of lots of elections. I've been trying to think of an analogy to explain our election to Americans.
You get bored and you just want to change things.
Yeah, that's right. But let's try this. This is kind of like if you could imagine an American election that was just an election for the House of Representatives. So our parliament, your House of Representatives, has 54 seats?
Right? Yeah, something like that. Don't ask me to pass my civics test right now.
We're kind of overrepresented in Canada. There's only, you know, there's 10% as many Canadians as Americans, but we've got 308 seats in our parliament. So we've got a lot of people that get elected. The party that wins the majority of the seats in Canada's parliament, the leader of that party doesn't get to become Speaker of the House. The leader becomes Prime Minister. That's the post. And since we combine the executive and the legislative branch, it's a pretty powerful position. That's the part that's like an American election. Here's the part that's not, because we've got 5 political parties, not 2. The chances are, the way things are going, nobody is going to end up with a majority. So you're going to have some kind of a power-sharing arrangement, either a coalition like the British have right now, or more likely what we call a minority government. The party that wins the most seats governs, and law-by-law basis, a budget program-by-budget program basis, they try to put together a coalition of support in Parliament on an ad hoc basis. So they don't do like the British have done, where they offer people seats at the cabinet table, the leaders of the other party, so they formally govern in an arrangement. It's more ad hoc, essentially, one-party rules, and every time it wants to pass a law or raise a tax or cut spending, it tries to rustle up enough votes to get things through, similar to the kind of brokerage that, to some degree, that goes on in the U.S. House of Representatives.
Why did it evolve that way?
It evolved that way because of the reluctance of the smaller parties to enter into formal coalition. The trouble with coalition is, and I think you're seeing it with the junior partner in the British coalition right now, the junior partner tends to get hammered by their own supporters for selling out. They're not seen as getting enough power, enough of their own agenda through. Their own supporters tend not to accept the trade-offs. So what tends to happen is you'll get these coalition arrangements, and then when you go to a general election, when the coalition decides to go to an election, the junior partner tends to get hammered. They tend to get blamed for all the bad stuff that the government did, not get much credit for the good stuff that it did, and their own supporters tend to turn on them for selling out. So the main reason we don't have coalitions, and part of the reason is governments are reluctant to share power and reluctant to hand out cabinet jobs and powerful positions to other parties, but generally, the feeling in the smaller parties is the same. They don't really like coalitions because it ties their hands. It compels them to support stuff they don't like, whereas they'd much sooner be in this kind of brokerage arrangement where, well, I'll maybe vote for you on that one, but I'm not going to vote for you on something else.
I see. Okay, Vaughn, by the way, I was poorly multitasking, and now I'm getting emails from people chastising me. 435 seats in the House of Representatives. Yes, yes.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I
said 455.
So these listeners, they're listening. I know you folks are listening. You're over my shoulder.
The U.S. House of Representatives is capped, right? I mean,
yeah.
Every time there's a census, they redistribute the House, but they don't add seats. They
right.
redistribute them. Whereas we tend to do both. Our parliament's getting kind of crowded. They keep joking that, you know, they're going to have to start adding bleachers or have people sit in each other's laps. Because what they tend to do in Canada is they add seats. Rather than take any representation away from anybody, any province, any rural or northern district, what they tend to do is just add seats so our parliament keeps growing.
Wow. All right, here's the question. You sent this along, and this is my first question. You got this May 2nd as your election is set. You have five parties, and this is what you wrote about each one. Here's what you wrote about Stephen Harper: conservative, cold, widely disliked, feared for his hidden agenda in some quarters, prime minister since 2006, currently ahead in the polls.
Yes.
Cold, wildly disliked, feared, currently ahead in the polls. What does that tell me about?
You have to realize that, you know, given our climate, cold is not necessarily seen as an insult in Canada. It's just seen as a normal course of events. That's a joke. Harper is the prime minister, has been since 2006. He managed to survive an election in 2008. And at the moment, if you were looking at the opinion polls, you'd bet that he's probably going to have the most seats in Parliament on when the votes are counted on May 2nd. He may not win a majority. He may fall short again, but the odds at the moment favor him for another term as prime minister.
And what do you mean by majority or bust in that if he they won't...
Okay, well, he's trying very hard this time to win a majority of seats. If he's got a majority, he has a hold on power for 4 years. You don't have to do that brokerage thing anymore.
Right.
You can implement your agenda. A lot of Canadians are ambivalent about Harper. The polls suggest people are comfortable with him as a prime minister as long as there's some kind of check on his power, that check being that he doesn't have quite a majority, that he needs to get support from other parties to get stuff through. And part of that is that sense that he has a hidden agenda, that he's more right-wing than he lets on, particularly on socially conservative matters. And if he were ever given a majority, we would see a more right-wing government than we've seen during his time over the last few years.
I see. So you kind of laid out what the campaign's going to be like. You have Michael Ignatieff, you have Jack Layton of the New Democrats, you have the Bloc Québécois leader, and you have the Green leader. I left you all of a minute here, Vaughn.
I'll give you the Elizabeth May line, since she's the Green leader and she's trying to win a seat in Parliament. The Greens have never been elected in Canada. They take about a million votes in our elections, so they have a following. May is basically concentrating all of her resources on winning a seat right here on Vancouver Island, a suburb of the capital, Victoria, called Saanich. She's running against the cabinet minister, Gary Lunn, and she's trying to get herself elected to Parliament so the Greens will have that seat. She got a bit of a setback this week when the consortium of broadcasters that puts together our televised debates announced that May was not going to have a seat in those debates, that they were only going to seat the four leaders whose parties actually have seats in our Parliament right now. May is very upset. She's threatening court action to secure herself that position in the debate. Obviously, if you're there on the debate, you get a credibility, an attention from the public that you don't get without it. And as I said, this is an absolutely critical campaign for May. If she doesn't win her seat in Saanich here in Victoria, probably the end of her as leader of the Greens, and it may be the end of the Greens as a political force in Canada. They've tried a bunch of times to win a seat in Parliament. They've never succeeded.
Whereas the Bloc Québécois, they're going to stick around whether they win or lose here.
Oh, the Bloc's doing just fine. It's a separatist party in Quebec. They get federally funded. They practically turn a profit. They usually win 50, 55 seats in Parliament. Quebecers love them. They bargain for a good deal for Quebec. They don't pay any attention to the rest of the country. They don't even run candidates outside of Quebec. And they're Quebec first, always. And I guess if you're a French-Canadian and a minority, you see them as a really advantageous party to you. They bargain for you, and they get you a pretty good deal.
Wow, campaigns that turn profits. All right. Real quick, you got an initiative vote here. First new sales tax. How's that look?
British Columbians are going to vote, our first initiative vote, in June. It's a mail-in ballot, so you're not going to the polling stations at the moment. 53% of British Columbians tell the pollsters they want to get rid of our new sales tax and go back to the old one. 33% say they'd stick with the new tax. The details, the debate will be in the details, but at the moment, the government is facing an uphill fight to get people here in BC to vote for that new sales tax.
Well, I'm going to be looking at that to see how that plays out south of the border in terms of people's attitudes about some of these other issues that we'll be voting on. All right, Vaughn.
Lots of initiative votes in Washington State. This is a new one for us.
Yeah, you guys are...
We don't have a Tim Iman either, although we do have some people up here that do stir up political trouble.
I'm sure he'd be willing to work north of the border if you could make it worth his while. All right, Vaughn, good talking to you.
Okay, Steve, next week.
Vaughn Palmer.
Drive.
Thank you very much. Vaughn Palmer, political correspondent, Vancouver Sun.
Support for KUOW comes from the MBA programs at the University of Washington, Bothell, offering 21-month leadership MBA programs in Bellevue and technology MBA programs at Bothell, now accepting applications for fall at uwb.edu/MBA.
94.9 KUOW News and Information. It's our spring pledge drive. The phone numbers to call, 206-543-9595, 1-866-677-5869.
Support for KUOW comes from Seattle Children's Theater's production of The Man Who Planted Trees, a multi-sensory play with an ecological message based on the book by Jean Giono, April 7th through May 1st, 2011. Tickets and info at sct.org.
It's 52 degrees with rain in Seattle.
And you're listening to Weekday on KUOW Seattle, where, as he does every Wednesday, following Vaughn Palmer, we go a little sober now with Robert Horton, film critic for the Herald and Everett.
That's right.
And a contributor to Weekday on KUOW. Good to see you.
Hi, Steve.
What were you going to say?
Well, I heard you guys talking about the way people that you hear on the radio turn out to look different from what you thought. And I was up in Monroe giving a talk a couple of weeks ago in my Humanities Washington speaker program. And after the talk was over, a guy came up to me and he said, "I listened to you on the radio. I thought you were about 6 feet tall and lanky," which Steve's laughing because I'm not. And
you're lanky.
5 minutes later, someone came up to me and said, "You look exactly the way you sound on the radio."
Really?
So you see, it's all in the eye of the beholder.
See, what concerns me is oftentimes when I do meet folks at events that I'm hosting or moderating, yes, somebody comes up to me and they says, "You don't look anything like," they're very nice about it.
Right,
but
still.
I could just see a little gleam in their eye goes down, a little tear wells up at the corner of their eye.
Yeah.
I can't help it.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. It's radio. That's the beauty of radio. We live in our minds.
Yeah.
You were thinking about, I'm going to call them cheats, if I may.
Yes.
Okay. You were thinking about how music sometimes can be used as a cheat to build emotional significance to a scene.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's only a cheat if the director perhaps hasn't really done their own job, their own work. The writers and directors haven't done their own work.
Mm, yeah, I guess that's fair.
Can we play a little bit of something and then we'll discuss it? And I also wanted to say, here's one of those times when you hold two ideas in your head at the same time, which you folks are much better able to do than me, because maybe you have your own examples of music that you thought was misused. That sort of has been taken over because it was used by movies. So our number for that, to share that with us, 206-543-5869. Amin Al-Saadi is here to take your calls, 1-800-289-5869. So here, a little Swan Lake. So you were Gods and Men, the movie Gods and Men, used Swan Lake here?
Yes, yes. A movie that just opened last Friday. Of course, you may know it from Black Swan, where it figured rather prominently in the storyline.
Oh, yes, of course I do. That's what I know that music from.
And yes, and many, many films actually have tapped that piece of music. Actually, it plays under the opening credits of Dracula. The Bela Lugosi Dracula, which otherwise...
1931,
yeah.
31, really?
Which doesn't have any music. It was early sound, and a lot of movies didn't particularly have a soundtrack of music the way they do now. But there was this little snatch of Swan Lake, which actually, as a child...
Right.
You recognize it,
I'm remembering
it, right?
That in relationship to Dracula.
And it's an eerie little... It's always stayed in my head ever since then. I've always loved that. And so, you know, that I guess my question is these very, very familiar pieces of music, as Swan Lake is. When does it become a cheat, and when is it really appropriate?
Now, what is of Gods and Men? Now, Black Swan was about ballet.
It is in. They are doing Swan Lake,
yeah.
So you know you can hardly argue against it at that point. And in my opinion, I thought that movie was so ridiculous that that it owed Tchaikovsky this huge debt for the final 15 minutes or so of the movie.
I did not know that.
Oh, it's a pretentious, preposterous film. but kind of fun, in part because of this amazing piece of music, which builds a certain power, and that's the climax of the movie and all that.
Well, that's a cheat then, if the movie's fun because they relied on the music.
It might not be a cheat, but it certainly reveals a certain weakness, I think. This film, Of Gods and Men, just opened, and I think people will be very moved by this film. It won the Best Picture award in France, and it has proved enormously popular. And it's based on a true story about some monks who were in Algeria in the 1990s, and there was a horrible civil war there, and they vanished at a certain point and are presumed killed. They're presumed that they were probably killed by the insurgents, Muslim insurgents who were protesting against the government, which the government was no great shakes either. But it's the story of these guys, and I think it's a beautiful film in many ways, and it's got these wonderful actors in it. And at a crucial moment, that piece of music plays a role, and it's not. It's actually, you see the source of the music in the scene, so it isn't just the director going in and saying, "I'm going to put Swan Lake over this in the editing room." It's been planned for, and it's really kind of amazing. And yet, there's this part of me that is sort of the critical thinker that thinks it's a shortcut. You know, we all know this music. It's eerie and it's haunting, and it puts you in touch with certain things. And would the scene have been the same, you know, without that music? Maybe that's a question that you should ask during these things. And in that case, maybe it would have been, because it's quite powerful. I can imagine it with the sound off and being quite powerful, or with an original piece of music, perhaps, or something like that. But it works. It definitely is, you know, gives you a shudder while you're watching this sequence, which is kind of a important late sequence in the film.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you even bring this up today, because I went and saw Billy Elliot last night at the Paramount.
Yes.
And I'd not seen the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But the music in the film is imbued with sort of familiar melodies and strains. In other words, I felt a little manipulated.
Hmm.
And I felt the music was deliberately being used to manipulate me.
Yeah.
By calling on folk tunes. Even though these are, you know, it's a big show,
yeah. So
show tunes, but calling on folk tunes and playing the folk tune in a way that I would have to be a cold-hearted sod,
yes.
not to feel for it. And it kind of bugged me a little bit,
yeah.
that the music was being used to do that. And I don't know if, again, is that a weakness of or maybe I should just like lighten up.
Yeah, right. It's such a fine line, because the question becomes, you know, is it just pulling the strings, or is it somehow imbued in the story and the setting and maybe the era that it's talking about, or something like that? And I think I'm obsessed with music and movies, so I think about this kind of thing a lot. And you know, The King's Speech, our Best Picture winner, the moment that it comes to its big climax, the moment in the movie where the king is giving the speech. It's in the title.
Walking down the hall. Right? Doesn't it start when he's walking down the hall?
I'm not sure. I don't remember when it starts. But the second movement of Beethoven's Seventh Symphony, which is one of the most beautiful pieces of music ever written by anybody, and which is has been used in a number of films, actually, comes up and goes under the entire speech. And when I was sitting there watching it, you know, I enjoyed the film, but to me, that's an example of that movie tugging the strings, because as far as I know, they didn't play that when the king made his original speech on the eve of the Second World War. I can't be sure of that. I actually don't know that. Somebody might have had it on in their parlor while they were listening to it. But that's an example that, as much I enjoyed the film, it's a well-acted film, but it's an interesting story. But to me, that was a little too much. And that's a fantastic piece of music. So, you know, and I was in the moment, I was certainly, oh, wow, that's, you know, stirring.
Yeah. All right. So we toss that out to you. Are these movies cheating by playing these familiar pieces, or does it make sense in situations, or do you mind if they're cheating? Another one that I thought of, and then I'm going to go to Eric here real quick, but another one that we thought of, maybe you thought of this, was, of course, Apocalypse Now, and Wagner, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Wagner has been changed by that movie for me.
I get what you're saying. And that's an example where I think maybe it was meant to indicate one thing, but it had a different effect, where when you watch that movie, you're kind of going, ooh, yeah, bomb those people, the right of the Valkyries. And it's like, no, that's not, I really don't want to be that excited about this.
Yeah, I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Well, you're different that way, yeah.
It smells like victory. Eric is in Seattle. Eric, Platoon, how you were thinking about Platoon in this question?
Yeah, there's a toward the end scene where one of the characters is being relentlessly attacked and everybody else is pulling away in helicopters. They do it in the classic slow motion, show him getting hit, and they're playing Barber's Opus number 8, which is a really evocative piece unto itself, but then they put it in there, and it became actually a fairly powerful scene, a lot of symbolism going on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sort of made that, not that that was an unknown classic, I guess, but that I'm sure brought it into a lot of people's minds who hadn't been familiar with that because it was such a memorable sequence.
Do you think it's a cheat?
By no means. In this case, I think it augmented the situation because they needed to really portray the emotion of the characters. Charlie Sheen was playing where there was the attachment to that particular character being shot. They just needed to play a piece that really showed the depth of sadness. And that piece unto itself, if you listen to it, does just that. It's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
And Oliver Stone was sort of going for this mythic level, too, that reaches outside of just the specifics of, 1968 or whatever it was, whatever year it was that was taking place. And so he was calling on, instead of playing the usual roster of rock and roll hits, he was kind of calling on something larger than that. So, and at that point, that piece of music had not been done to death in movies, although it's certainly popped up since then.
Eric, thanks for that. And give us your own weigh in on this question as well, if you would, at 1-800-289-5869. We have a few more minutes. Everything's crammed because we're fundraising as well. Eric emails us, says, one place where the director cheated in Once Upon a Time in America. At one point, Robert De Niro looks through a barbed gate longingly at a place of his youth, and the score plays an instrumental phrase from the Beatles' Yesterday. Totally wrong. Whereas they can do it totally wrong often. Movies can blow it often with music.
I guess at this point, Yesterday is a classical music piece, and yes, I would agree. I actually agree with that assessment.
Yeah, that'd yank you right out of the film, wouldn't it?
It's too much, yeah.
In Platoon, by the way, featuring an earlier sober Charlie Sheen's.
Well, whatever.
Did they use rock and roll in Platoon a lot? Was that a film that had rock and roll as a soundtrack?
I haven't seen it in a long time. I don't remember. Certainly it played a role in a lot of the Vietnam films of that era, but off the top of my head, I think it did, but I couldn't swear to it.
I mean, what's interesting is, of course, we're talking about classical music as cheats, but of course, people have been using rock and roll.
Oh, that's a huge industry unto itself of plugging in the right song at the...
Changing the movie entirely by finding the person who has the skill to make that... To make that rock and roll song work is probably much in demand in Hollywood films that are in need of that.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes it's just right, too.
Yeah.
I just saw a film that's opening on Friday. I saw it last night called The Music Never Stopped, and it's based on an Oliver Sacks case study of a guy who lost his memory completely because of a brain tumor and could only respond in any kind of way to a memory of his own life when he heard a song from the late 60s. Which was when he was young and when he was in a band. It's kind of a fascinating trigger.
I'm surprised more Sax stories aren't turned into films. Mm-hmm. Every one of his case studies are amazing. Yeah. All right, last comment here. Charles in Shoreline. Hi, Charles.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. What were you looking at?
Lux Aeterna by Ligeti at the end of 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Now, but was that a cheat?
No, the opposite. It totally made the movie.
Yeah.
It'd be no good at all.
And I don't know if anybody had used Ligeti in a movie before that, but, sort of leave it to Stanley Kubrick to come up with that. And then since then, other people have gone back. And the only thing you can think of is, 2001.
Yeah, that's the only thing.
Because you get the reference that way.
That's the only thing that gets me about that is when it happens.
Yeah, well, for that matter, also Sprock Zarathustra from 2001 is now known as a theme from 2001.
That's right. All right, here, two emails, and then we're gonna do a lovely segue, which you have to sit for.
All right.
First, Bob writes, I think Wes Anderson's hundreds of musical cues per movie go beyond cheating. They're a substitute for true emotional character development. Ouch. And then Joe writes about Wagner. When I sat through the 16-hour ring cycle, the high point for me was Flight of the Valkyries. It was fun to imagine helicopters flying into the opera house, firing rockets and machine guns to put us out of our tedious misery.
Oh, man.
I was amused to hear it soundchecked in Rango to accompany a similar aerial attack by rodents riding bats. Something sure flew over the tiny heads of his intended audience, but sets them up for all the similar references they'll hear in the future. It's lazy, sure, but fun all the same. All right, and here, by way of segue, here's a little Star Wars music. No? No Star Wars music? Oh, yes, you're ready.
I've been told to stay around.
Yeah, I'm not, you're staying. I'm not you're staying. I want to hear what you have to say about this. All right, so, first of all, Star Wars, not a classical piece, though, of course, it has become one now. But that was John Williams, right?
Mm-hmm.
He wrote that.
He has occasionally been accused of borrowing from classical pieces in his career.
As has George Lucas, I think.
Yes.
Yes, that's very true.
But really, we're talking about Star Wars because we're talking about our spring pledge drive, and we'd like you to call in 206-543.
And we wanted the excuse to play the music.
9595. No, we have a reason. We are offering this hour... if you pledge at the $200 level, so you call in to 206-543-9595 and you say, hey, I've got an extra $200 and I want a ticket to see the Pacific Science Center Star Wars exhibit, and you'll get it. And you'll also become a member of KOW, which is pretty cool. A double feature, as it were.
So you get a pair. For $200, you get a pair to see this exhibit.
Exactly.
A pair of passes to see this
And we have
exhibit.
10 of those pairs of passes.
By the way, it's Star Wars.
10 of you call in. At the pledge at the $200 level.
Where science meets imagination, exploring the futuristic technologies found in Star Wars universe and comparing them to real scientific progress. I know I have my lightsaber. I hope you have yours.
I'm just going to tell a little anecdote here, if I may.
Please do. But first, 10 pairs, $200 to get a pass, a pair of passes to the Pacific Science Center. 206-543-9595.
So my brother, who was a freshman in college, recently came to visit Seattle on his spring break. And he came with a bunch of friends, and I took them out to dinner. And I said, what do you want to do in Seattle? And they said, what is the nerdiest thing that Seattle has to offer? I think this will give you an idea of what my family is like. And I sort of sat there stunned for a minute, and then I thought, there's a Star Wars exhibit at Pacific Science Center. So that was one of the things that I recommended. But then I also thought, hey, you know, that's a pretty good call-in show. We could do a call-in show. What's the nerdiest thing
you
Seattle
can do in
has
Seattle?
To offer?
There really is no shortage of nerdy things to do in Seattle. That's
so just a little
nice
behind
it.
The scenes for you, how we get our ideas. Sometimes it's, you know, you go out to dinner with your brother and he asks you a question that stumps you and you think, hey, that's a good question for a kind of a call-in show that would bring the community together. It's the kind of thing we want to hear from listeners. One of my friends said, things that are nerdy in the rest of the country are cool in Seattle.
Exactly. Like Star Wars.
Like Star Wars.
I'm just going to say, nerdy to one is, for example, having the app for your lightsaber.
How many other cities have a museum devoted to science fiction?
A whole science fiction museum.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. 206-543-9595 is the number to call if you would like to take advantage of these passes, two passes.
Nine left.
Pacific Science Center.
You pledge $200.
Pledge.
Yes. And enjoy the music, because the music will then become imbued in your mind as a trip to the Science Center. And perhaps every time you hear this music, you'll think about public radio as well. How will that work? Now, public radio.
I don't know, how often do you hear this music in your daily life, Steve?
I think from now on I'm going to hear it whenever I come and sit down.
Steve likes to hum the Darth Vader theme to himself when he's walking into meetings.
And that makes you think of public radio.
I think it will from now on. I am going to start.
So when you're walking into a meeting and you need some, you know, you're about to give a big presentation and you want to make yourself all pumped up and feel good, so you're humming the Star Wars music, the Darth Vader
music. Or the Darth
Vader.
Yeah, a little bit of swagger comes into your stride if you go for that Vader theme. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. So then you think of pledge public radio and you call, give us a call, 543-9595. Or as our lovely producer Liz Jones said, pledge you will.
This is the pledge drive you were expecting. 206-543-9595. 10 pairs, 8 left, $200, Pacific Science Center. And, you know, feel free to email us with your nerdy suggestions for Seattle, and we'll also follow up on that show as well. Thank you, Robert.
Oh, I'm still here. Hi, Steve.
Yes, thanks, you Steve. Are. This is Weekday.
Support for KUOW comes from Clipper Vacations. Clipper offers daily trips to Victoria, B.C., and day trips such as gray whale watching and to the Skagit Valley tulip fields. Information on these trips and other Pacific Northwest travel opportunities are online at clippervacations.com.
KUOW and Seattle Center present Festal 2011, a year-long series of cultural events honoring the richness and diversity of the Pacific Northwest. For more information, visit our events page at kuow.org.
The phone numbers you need are 206-543-9595, toll-free at 1-866-677-5869. It's 52 degrees and overcast in Seattle.
KUOW would like to acknowledge the businesses that have donated food, beverages, or services throughout our pledge drive, especially Delivery Express, Stumptown Coffee Roasters, Choice Organic Teas, and Mighty O Donuts. Thank you for supporting KUOW.
All right. Michael Parks needs, you know, I don't know if Michael Parks needs the Star Wars theme to start his segment or not from now on. But, you know, Rainey, if you feel like it, we could go out with that, perhaps. Michael Parks is editor emeritus of Marple's Northwest Business Letter, a resource about the economy, the companies, the Pacific Northwest and Alaska. He's been joining us here on Wednesdays to talk about business and the economy. It's good to see you again, sir.
You didn't mention.
Card-carrying member of
KUOW. Proud member of KUOW.
For a few. How many? What other stations?
And KUSC in Southern California. KXPR, Sacramento, California. If you got a musical theme for me, of course it's Wagner. Didn't like that guest last segment that was dissing The Ring. Come on now.
No, that was an email.
I'm a ring nut, so I love The Ring.
Are you like that listener, though? Do you ever hear the Valkyries come in, and your mind you see the helicopters
I
from
don't,
Apocalypse
and I'm,
Now?
I'm that reference escapes me because, believe it or not, Steve, I don't think I've ever watched a movie, Apocalypse Now.
Well, then don't have it be tainted. Don't have The Ring be tainted now by Apocalypse Now and its soundtrack, or watch it in soundtrack.
And I should say I'm a member of those stations partly because I am an opera fan. KUSC has a wonderful Sunday night opera, KXPR, a Monday night opera. And, of course, we have a different station in this market, but I couldn't get along without KUOW. I kind of regard my membership as very akin to my newspaper subscription. I pay for the media that I consume. Can't imagine life without public radio.
King is going to be a public radio station.
That's right.
If it's not
absolutely
already changing over. Yep. All right, you and I were both intrigued by an article that was in the Seattle Sunday Times, a great newspaper with a great reporter.
Yep.
Craig Welch did that story on coal and how this region of the country, from BC and Longview in particular, affected by the continuing extraction of coal from the Northwest.
Sure.
From Wyoming, from Montana, Colorado.
A great headline, Coal Quandary.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing better illustrates kind of our conundrum. I call it a coal conundrum if you want to be alliterative. Start with this. The coal that we would export from the Columbia River and from Cherry Point would come out of Montana, which is a sister state, which is a poor state, one of the poorest states, and they badly need the jobs. Jobs would be created in parts of Washington where unemployment is relatively high, where they need the jobs. China's going to buy the coal. The coal would be, the coal we're talking about would be exported to China. China is going to buy coal, whether they buy it from us or from Australia or from some other place. The U.S. Gets about half of its electricity by burning coal. But, of course, Craig Welch caught the quandary. Our governor has just signed an agreement, negotiated an agreement, that will end the burning of coal at the TransAlta plant at Centralia, our state's only coal-burning power plant. Again, quandary. If you're a Puget Sound energy customer, some of your electricity comes courtesy of a mine mouth plant, so-called mine mouth plant, at the interestingly named Coal Strip. They strip the coal. Coal Strip, Montana. I think there are two big mine mouth plants there. Maybe there are four. So, you know, lots of conundrum, lots of quandary. As I think about the objections to coal, I think about this, that if we want China to stop burning coal, and I think we do, and I think they do long term as well, what we need to do is help China get rich, because it is when you get rich that you can worry more and be more concerned with the quality of the air and the quality of the environment. I think it's hard for me to deal with the idea that we should, having become an advanced economy ourselves, we should now say to China, no, you're going to have to go a different route. You may not use a dirty fuel to industrialize. I would rather see us focus on trying to figure out how to accomplish what's called carbon capture and sequestration and get ourselves closer to clean coal.
But here's part of the conundrum for this region. Do we then, are we the facilitator by which we ship, and it's not just, of course, the coal that gets burned, but what happens to the land in Wyoming and Montana in digging up that coal in Colorado?
Sure.
And that's the question that was being asked. Does it go out of Longview, where a proposal is being made to build an expanded shipping plant, or does it get shipped up to a new facility, expanded facility up in British Columbia? Do we gain from that wealth, or do we say, oh, no, we don't want to be tainted by it and let it go somewhere else?
Right. I mean, those are all good questions. They're hard ones to answer, and all of them are addressed in that good story in the Seattle Times on Sunday by Craig Welch.
Of course, the other problem with that is when you look at when people really take energy seriously and they look at the wedges that those Princeton economists tried to figure out, what can we do in these small wedges to get us to a zero emission, or at least a flat line in CO2 emissions by 2054, mm-hmm. to make a real difference?
Sure.
Coal continues to be part of the equation for another 15 to 30 years.
Absolutely. And one of the ways to get to cleaner energy consumption is to encourage the price to go up, which causes people to look for more efficient ways to use electricity. I was astounded by an essay, I think it was in the op-ed of the Wall Street Journal last week, that said, first of all, we're not running out of oil. We have lots of oil. But the point that captured my attention was that our energy efficiency from oil today is 13%. The rest of it is lost to inefficiencies, lack of proper combustion, and so forth. And the way to improve that efficiency is to make for higher price, and make that justifies the investments in higher technology, makes us more efficient.
Now, when the Wall Street Journal made that argument that we're not running out of oil, mm-hmm. did they include in that question of efficiencies the cost that new oil, how much it costs to get that newer oil out of the ground?
Because I think they did. Yes. Yeah.
And they would still argue we're not running out of oil
right.
in that
that's
case.
Right.
Huh?
That's right.
I'd have to look at their numbers.
Yeah.
I'll have to look at their numbers.
I'll email you the article. I realize you're not a daily reader of the Wall Street Journal.
You are. I would be. Yeah. They have this barrier. The paywall,
which the New York Times has put in. I'm a New York Times subscriber, so I don't bump up against the paywall. I did read that of the visitors to the New York Times, about 90% of them access fewer than 20 articles a month, which means they will never bump into the paywall.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah.
So 99 cents now for the next 6 months.
That's right.
All right, you also were looking in a Bloomberg item about Boeing talking about raising its dividend a penny.
Raise the dividend next year. This was a story that slipped into the Friday edition of the Seattle Times, kind of gets lost in the weekend shuffle. But James Bell, the chief financial officer of Boeing, at a conference in Chicago, said Boeing is looking at raising the dividend next year. Bloomberg speculated that it would be a penny a share, 43 cents up from 42 cents. But what caught my eye was Bell's statement that they're looking at raising the production rate of the 737, which was made at Renton, to 42 and beyond. It's the biggest number I've seen for the 737, which is, of course, the best-selling airplane in history. That's going to require more pairs of hands than are working at Boeing now, in my opinion. And by the way, Boeing has to have long lead times to let its suppliers know what its plans are. If you go back and think about the kind of headlines we've seen about Boeing, really since last summer, they've mostly been positive. And this, for me, is a really kind of a good indicator, a straw in the wind, for our regional economy going forward for at least the next 2 or 3 years. The fly in the ointment, of course, is that we have a machinist contract up in September of 2012. We know what happened the last time the machinist contract was up, a disastrous 2-month strike during which the world financial system almost melted down.
Yeah. I wonder how that will play out this time.
It's going to be very interesting.
So real quick, you view this, that this isn't just a trial balloon. He's saying this will probably happen.
He would not have thrown the number out. I mean, he knows he's being covered. And it's the first time I've seen that number. The numbers I have seen, current rate about 31, moving to 34, and then to 38. This is the first time I've seen the 42 number. You think about it, it's about 40% higher than the current production rate. Going to require a lot of pairs of hands at Boeing and a lot of pairs of hands at Boeing suppliers.
Does that mean anything at all about... Again, real quick, because I see I've gone into my time. Does that mean anything at all about their concern about getting the 787 out and the cost of the 787? Do they see the 737 as it pays for itself?
Oh, right? Yes.
So they're looking at the 737 production as a way to sort of balance out what could be a plane that doesn't pay for itself for a long time?
Yes. I'm sure the 737 at this point is a cash cow. They have to get the 787 through its flight test program, get deliveries going. They desperately need that. I don't think Bell would have talked about raising the dividend if he was uncertain about getting the 787 into commercial production.
So it tells us something about the economy here over the next, in the next like 5-year window.
Absolutely.
Because we have the tanker contract as well.
Yep.
Michael Parks thinks about the economy, shares it with us every Wednesday and weekday. He is the editor emeritus of Marple's Northwest Business Letter and a proud member of many public radio stations, 3 around this country, because he likes opera and he can stream. You can stream KUSC.
Absolutely.
You can stream because that's what those folks offer. We offer these services by way of not just, I mean, it's a service, and we want to make sure you are well served because we are asking for your hard-earned dollars, as we are doing right now.
Yes. Yes, we are here as part of our spring pledge drive where we invite you to participate in this funny little business model that we call public radio, wherein we offer you great news and information and interesting stories and services and programs like Weekday and like All Things Considered and like Morning Edition. And we offer them free to you through your radio dial all year, all the time, 24/7. And then a couple times a year, we interrupt that programming and we say, hey, you know that stuff you've been listening to and enjoying and talking about at cocktail parties? And I don't know how many cocktail parties you go to, but maybe you do. And you talk about it. And you say, hey, I just learned this really cool thing on NPR. Well, that stuff, that's what we do. That's our work. That's our job. And we need your help to support that. And you can do that by calling 206-543-9595.
And a touch of a sweetener here. Pacific Science Center has Star Wars, where science meets imagination at the center. And for a pledge of $200, we will throw in as a thank you, because these are thank yous, a pair of tickets to take your fledgling scientist, perhaps, to the Pacific Science Center and see Star Wars, where science meets imagination. You may even learn how to defy gravity when you go there.
All right, where science meets imagination, as we were talking about in the last
hour. I just say, pledge for that, because we have 7 left, and we need to have you get enthralled by that.
Right,
by calling 206-543-9595 or 1-866.
You hear this music and you think, oh, I forgot to pledge.
1-866-677-5869.
It's like the force is moving through you, that you feel the force. We're using the force. You feel the force is asking you to pick up the phone. You feel your hand reaching out, your hands reaching out, you're picking up the phone, you're dialing. Actually, maybe you're not even doing any of that stuff. The phone is just picking itself up. You have to do is you look at it and the phone picks itself up.
Sage, as you talk about that, I think of the driveway moments. They occur often with me when I'm listening to KUOW, listening to a fascinating piece, either locally produced or produced nationally. The driveway moments come often in my life.
And yeah.
That's one of the reasons that I am a proud member of KUOW.
I had one this morning listening to Lourdes Garcia Navarro, just when she was talking to those other journalists, wondering if perhaps they had been brainwashed or they were afraid they had been sedated by the Libyan government when they were eating the food. And so the guy was only eating salad because he was afraid that perhaps the Libyans were putting sedatives in the journalist's food. That was one of my driveway moments. I was sitting there, I have to listen to this whole story. $200 as a thank you gift. You get a pair of tickets to Star Wars Where Science Meets Imagination, 206-543-9595.
Gene Davidson writes, at the beginning of the year, I switched to the graveyard shift at work. Sorry about that, Gene. For several years, I've listened to Morning Edition and All Things Considered during my commutes, and I've listened to many pledge drives without contributing, but now, because of the graveyard shift, I listened to Sound Opinions, Living on Earth, Selected Shorts, Changing World, and of course, Weekday. I relied on KOW for my news, but I didn't realize the wealth of conversations and stories that I could listen to when everyone else is at sleep or at work. These deep, personal, and informative shows have convinced me that it's time to contribute. Thank you, Gene, and thank you for calling 206-543-9595 and joining the public radio community with Gene. It's true. We do have a lot of things on offer. Maybe you listen to Weekday regularly, but you haven't discovered the wealth of programming that we offer at other times. You can discover that through podcasts or changing your job if you decide you want to start working the graveyard shift. You can find out everything else on KUOW.
Or you can be like Michael and stream. Do you stream KUOW sometimes when you're down in the
I do indeed. Travel? Out of town. I was in Palm Springs, California a couple of weeks ago, picked up my favorite KUOW programs, including a segment of Weekday.
Yeah, you got to listen to John Talton on your segment while you were gone.
Terrific. Dominic Gates, terrific.
All right, 206-543-9595. We want you to show your support, and we can give you this great thank you, $200. You pledged $200. You were thinking about doing it to show your support to this public radio service. Well, now you can get, as a thank you, a pair of tickets to the Star Wars Where Science Meets Imagination at Pacific Science Center.
Only six left, so call now.
206-543-9595. Do not delay. 1-866-677-5869. We had a goal of 15,000 for this program. 16,590 because you called and showed your support for this public radio service. Thank you very much. Don't stop if you haven't yet become a member. We're waiting for you because we have a goal of 800,000. We get there when you call.
Our goal, as you may notice, is a little bit lower this time than it was last year. That's because the powers that be here at the radio station add up the numbers, they crunch the numbers, and they tell us exactly the amount that we need to run this station. We're not asking for more, we're not asking for less, we're asking for the amount that we need, and we will get there if you call and pledge your support. 206-543-9595, 1-866-677-5869.
206-543-9595. If you've been thinking about calling, it's a good time. To the point's coming up. But right now, we hope we have associated now Star Wars with pledging your support to public radio.
I'm feeling it right now. I don't know Star Wars well enough. I'm flying one of those little planes into the center of the Death Star right now, I think.
You haven't been spending your... See, that's why the nerdiest thing you can do in Seattle, we're going to do that show because Sage needs to do more nerdy things. $200 and we'll send you a thank you gift of a pair of tickets to the Pacific Science Center Star Wars Where Science Meets Imagination. And I hope they will be able to help me defy gravity soon and give us all lightsabers.
Lightsabers. Yeah, absolutely.
Because that would be a fine way to do radio. You have 20 seconds.
Where else could you get Canada culture and coal conundrum
very
nicely covered in the same hour?
I always think of it as cash, but, you know.
And we ask you to give your cash as well. Thank you very much. Thank you for supporting public radio. This is Weekday.